I have with me George Serra, electronica composer. I'm going to play a track from some of his latest work, and then we're getting it into an interview. This is George Serra remixing MIA Sunshowers. George Serra is good on killradio.org. George, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going really well. It's really an honor to have you in here, man. I'm a huge fan.
It's an honor to be here.
I'm having a little bit of sound. Can you give a test?
Hello, hello. Check, check, 1, 2. Check.
There we go.
Check, 1, 2.
That's great. Okay. That's a good start to the interview.
Yeah, turn on the mic.
So what was that? That was MIA... Sunshowers remix. How'd you get, let's just start with the present. How'd you get started with that?
I went out and bought the CD single because I liked it. And I noticed that there's an acapella track on there. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do a remix. Because I actually I'm not a fan of doing remixes. I've only done a few. But I just figured... I finished this series for the Discovery Network, and it was a lot of work, and I wanted to do something that was going to be challenging but different. And I just thought, okay, I'll do something that I like the least, and that's remixing. And so I actually, like, asked, offered to do free remixes, and no one was interested. So, I mean, even to, like, local unsigned bands, you know? And everyone was like, yeah, whatever. So I was like, okay, so I'll do this remix for MIA, because everyone has said no. And it's getting played on, like, you know, commercial radio right now, and like independent radio. So I'm very happy about that. Like, and
you've been a big hit on KCRW. I know you've been on Morning Becomes Eclectic a couple times, and
yeah,
that's where I first heard your music.
Yeah, they've played it here and there, and then Kicks You. But the real surprise is Indie 103. They've been playing it too.
Those guys are great. Yeah, actually, they play a lot of good music.
Yeah, so. So, yeah, it's just so, you know, if anyone wants a copy, it's free because it's a bootleg, you know, but whatever. So it was a really good way for me to kind of, you know, come into it with no expectations. And, you know, I really felt, you know, like, wow, okay, you know, it was a humbling experience.
But, I mean, you're being modest. I mean, I've seen you live. Last time I saw you was at the L.A., what was it called? The music festival recently, David Jay was there.
Oh, Grand Performances.
Yeah, Grand Performances. I mean, and that was a huge crowd, and that was you center stage with String Trio.
Yeah, I was really like, I had a lot of great musicians. Robert Williams from Captain Beefheart and the Stranglers, and David Jay from Bauhaus, and Josh Hayden, Monique Powell, and, you know, all these different... you know, Success Singh, who's a tabla player, who he leads his temple. He's a, you know, his Hindu temple, and
nice.
He got a substitute to come down to do that show. So it was just for me to get all these different musicians, all these different people, all different faiths, people who aren't even musicians, like James Langteau. You know, I read the draft of his book, I was like, okay, can you come up and do something? And so it was just, you know. It was sort of, you know, a great opportunity to get all this different talent together. But the emphasis was to do electronic music. You know, that's the thing. I didn't want to veer from that. I didn't want to bust into a rock song or something.
Right. But, I mean, that sort of seems to be your MO is, like, making, you know, attaching meaning to electronic music. Which you don't see a lot, and especially with a live performance. So you perform with the live with String Trio a lot.
Yeah.
And, like, I've seen electronic acts try to perform live, and, you know, they come close to making it a real performance. You know, like Orbital has the cool little lights on their their glasses when they play, and or maybe I've seen Moby play with like a live drummer, or he'll pick up a guitar or something. Yeah. But your work always seems to be about the music.
Well, I think when I was a kid, I was really into a lot of the just the serious. Musicians like I remember just going to see this drum seminar with Terry Bozzio. It was just Terry Bozzio playing drums, and for like 2 hours, and asking questions. And a friend in high school, Jake Feldman, his father was Victor Feldman. I don't know if you know Victor Feldman, but he played on all the Steely Dan records. He played with Miles Davis. So growing up, I was like a total, like, you know, musician, like, freak, like Jaco Pastorius, all those guys, you know, like, I was just into, like, serious musicians. Tony Williams, the drummer for Miles Davis, and Clyde Stubblefield, he played drums for James Brown. I was really into the musicians and their ability to play, and I used to practice 7-8 hours a day. I mean, I wanted to be, like a fusion soloist, whatever, and I failed at that. So,
how did you discover electronic music as a instrument?
Well, it was, I guess, lucky in the sense that it happened at such an early age. I was 8 years old, and it was Tangerine Dream, and it was their score for the movie Sorcerer, and that had such an impression on me. And then, so it was through soundtrack music that I really. Because I think a lot of people kind of have this biasness against electronic music because it's more about the compositions and the programming. But when you're like 8 years old and you just fall in love with whatever it is you're hearing, and it just happens to be electronic music through film, you know, you've overcome that bias already, you know? So, yeah. Like, and then another film, Midnight Express with the George Romero score. But I think the real turning point for me was when I was a huge David Bowie fan, and I listened to the Low record, and that probably really just, from that point on, it was like I just knew I wanted to just be involved in electronic music. I knew it wasn't about musicianship for me, you know, just this is just me personally. It was about creating sounds and writing music. And I was lucky because instead of side one, I started with side two, Alo. And if anyone's familiar with that record, side two, Alo was the ambient instrumental side before CDs. So I was expecting to hear, you know, like Hunky Dory or, you know, a rock album. Mm-hmm. And that was just, it, you know, so.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up electronic music and its relation to film, because when I think about it, and I've been into electronic music since I was a kid, I think for me I was also like 7 or 8, and it was probably something like Men Without Hats, Safety Dance, or something like that.
Pop Goes the World.
Pop Goes the World, yeah. you know, none of my friends were into it. You know, they thought it was just very strange that I'd be listening to this kind of music. That, you know, they didn't really perceive it as music because it didn't have that live element to it. But in my head, I was thinking, well, this is really a lot more like a film. You're piecing together little stories, sewing them, and then presenting them. You know, this is the story that I came up with.
Right.
Now have a listen.
Right.
And it's exactly the way I've made it. It's always going to be that way.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just whatever one's personal taste is. That's all. At the end of the day, you know, you can't change that. And it's not better or worse. It's just whatever, you know. But I think for me, you know, I always, I mean, when I go out to be entertained, I love, there's nothing more for me than see an amazing musician, you know. And I've definitely been inspired by DJ sets in the past, but for me, it's just like at the end of the day, it's just like I don't care what instrument it is. It could be the tabla, it could be sax. I just, you know, there's something, you know. I mean, even, and I like those shows where there's like 10 people. You know, like I've been to the Jazz Bakery with 10 people in the audience and just seeing some band rip on stage and. Like, I'm just like, wow. I don't know. I mean, that's, to me, that's the connection I'll always have. It's, you know, it brings me back to that kid again.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man.
Well, I mean, it's all about telling stories. You know, someone can get up on stage.
Right.
And bring you through an experience. Then.
Right, right. Absolutely.
Shall we play another song from your new unreleased demo?
Yeah.
Kill Radio exclusive. Well, not exclusive. I guess the last track's been playing all over the radio.
But most of this stuff, actually, the track three, it was just finished like a few days ago.
Shall we play that?
Yeah. That's with David J. from Bauhaus. He's singing and Holly Palmer's doing backing vocals. And if you're a David Bowie fan, she toured with him on the 19 tour and is all over that record as well. So
nice. This is George Serra on Is Good on killradio.org.
Spalding gray cast with Spalding gray cast wall Spalding gray cast Spalding gray.
crushed metal and bruised brain. The paralysis that robbed him of his step. He makes to tell the audience, but the words die on his lips. His past is so much baggage.
With George Serra on killradio.org.
Hey.
So, George, before you became George Serra, you were something called THC. What was that?
Yeah. THC was like an electronic, started out like a really hard electronic, you know, project, you know, I guess is the best way. It's just instrumental, really fast techno. And then it sort of mellowed out when I got a lead singer and, became more song, kind of more, you know, trip hop with more strong song structure. And, it was just sort of this, yeah, that's what
well,
it was.
How did you make yourself sort of, you know, known as, an, like, okay, you give yourself the name THC, you make some music, and then were you going out and doing DJ sets and making friends? Because when I started getting into your music and then later discovered that you were also THC, I had to go back into my collection and find out all the music I already had.
Wow.
Of remixes that THC had done.
Yeah, what happened was I just started THC with, actually, it was a friend, this guy Q, who goes under the name Uberzone. And he let me record a bunch of, because he had all those analog stuff, you know, like Jupiter 8s and Jupiter 6s and TV 303s and, you know, 909 drum machines. So we just did really like 150, 160 BPM, just hard techno with just crazy whatever. And I sent that stuff out to a few labels. And ironically, it was an industrial like music label out of Washington, D.C. called Fifth Column. These guys, ChemLab, they started a label. And they were like, we want to put this out, you know. And I didn't really even try that much, you know. It sort of happened. And I went on tour on the East Coast, and that was a nightmare. And then, and you know, it was just, that's kind of how it happened, you know, just the love of music and not any having expectations. You know, what kind of, you know, one thing led to another. But I no longer use that name because I think too many people just kind of had that marijuana reference. And, you know, like, to me, I don't smoke, and I'm totally against it. So I'm sorry. I know it's not a popular statement. But I'm going to be totally honest. You know, it's a total waste of time.
You're over it, huh?
Yeah, and I wish a lot of other people would be as well. But, you know, I mean, not like the whole public, but I'm just saying, you know, I know people who, you know, it's consuming their lives. So
yeah,
and if you can do it and not have a problem with it, that's great.
Yeah, I think the thing that people don't understand, like in general, about all forms of recreational drug use, it's not so much, you know, that it's doing harm to your body or to your brain, because that's like a personal decision, whatever you want to do.
Right.
But that it sort of robs you of clarity, which kind of robs you of time.
Yeah.
You know, it puts off the kind of work you need to do in order to really move on with your life. I mean, for a lot of people, not for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some people that I think, you know, really do need to be stoned all the time.
Oh, yeah,
they're totally
yeah.
functionless.
Exactly. No, and I agree with that. Totally, yeah. So that's kind of how the THC happened. It was through first with a collaboration with the Uber Zone guy, Q. And then around 96, that's when it kind of, I just started writing more. I walked away from all that and just started playing the piano. And there was a woman, Sarah Folkman, who's a vocalist, and I asked her to be a part of this. You know, if she wanted to put her words to the music, and then THC kind of took on more of a, you know, melancholic, slow, song structured type of vibe, and we did that for a couple of years. And then after that, when her and I ended our creative partnership, I just thought, yeah, it's just time to go back to the name, George Serra.
Nice. You've collaborated with a lot of people. I mean, we were already discussing with David Jay, and I know I've seen you perform with Angie Hart.
Yeah.
And you've opened for a lot of big names, too.
Yeah, I've been, like, really lucky, like Babel Gilberto at Boys Hall. That was cool.
That was a good show. I opened up for
Spearhead at the Galaxy Theater, and then kind of more like pop stuff, like Nika Costa. I've opened up for Crystal Method. You know, whatever. It's always nice because you don't have to worry about the draw.
Right.
Just show up and it's packed. You know,
but you really have come up. You know, started a name for yourself within the Los Angeles artistic community anyway. I mean, I tell people, oh, I'm going to have George Serra on my show, and they're like, you'd like George Serra, like the composer? I mean, that's...
Really?
Yeah, it's really strange. I mean, like, within my circle of friends...
Are any of them single women?
No, actually.
I know, they're all, like, the nerds. That's the thing. I'm just tired of talking to people after my show, and, you know, I'm looking at their, like, you know, Harry Potter pin on their jacket. Just like... Thanks, you know, but
what was the one I saw you? You did a show for LACMA. It was the art walk, and it all sort of ended at an art gallery.
Oh yeah,
just a couple months ago.
Right.
That was kind of cool. How'd you get involved with something like that? I mean, how do you find out about these things?
Those guys. Well, I grew up in LA, so you've lived here all your life, so people know you and. They called, and I've done stuff for LACMA before in the past, and I've done stuff for SF MoMA, which is San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, which is, that's an amazing venue. And even like the Field Museum in Chicago, they've licensed music from me to do like a presentation. So I think amongst that crowd, those people actually are really... you know, they, like Getty and Grand Performances, these people, like, really love music. I mean, they have no, you know, for them, it's, they're fans, you know. I think that's a huge difference. It's, like, they're out there constantly checking music out, like myself or you or whatever, you know. I mean, the reason I did the MIA remix wasn't because, like, you know, I was trying to promote myself. I happened to buy that CD single, and notice that there's an a cappella track, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't the other way around.
I always wondered about that, like, if I wanted to remix something, like...
I say
because you have to get
it.
The masters and yeah. all stuff. But if you can find an a cappella track, you can just sort of...
Yeah, so, so like I said, that you know, I did that because, you know, I, it was... Like, if that, you know, like, I bought it as a fan, you know, and just happened to stumble upon it and to get all the rejections. So I was like, okay, cool, you know.
Cool, man. Let's play something else. Maybe something from one of your albums. You did an album with Anthony Stewart Head from Buffy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was an interesting collaboration. You want to talk a little bit about that and maybe
yeah.
play a song from that album?
Yeah, well... there's a writer. I'll just really quickly. The writer for Buffy, Marty Noxon, one of the writers, was working on an episode, a character, and she decided to use my music as a integral part of the whole thing. And I ended up being on the show and performing a bunch of my music, and that sort of led to a friendship with Anthony Stewart Head, who's on the show. And he, it turns out he's a huge Radiohead fan, and he loves Bjork, and he loves all these other artists. So, and his brother is a musician, Murray Head, the One Night in Bangkok guy. And, yeah, so we just started getting together on the weekends and just started messing around. And we had came up with about 22 song ideas, and then was like, let's make a record, you know? So it actually started from us just before we said, let's make an album, let's see if, you know, we could strike up a friendship and a musical, you know, partnership. So, yeah, we spent 3 months just messing around, writing music, and that's how it happened.
This is a... I'm going to play the Beatles cover because I'm hooked on that.
Yeah, that's Holly Palmer singing on that too, man. She's all over.
This is a cover of We Can Work It Out by George Sarah with Anthony Stewart Head and Holly Palmer.
Baby, are you going? Come back. Try to see it my way. Keep on talking till I can't go on. Why you see it your way? Run the risk of knowing that our love might soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong. Still you think that it's alright.
There's a chance that we might fall on before too long.
We can work it out. We can work it out.
We can work it out.
We can work it out.
It's very short. Oh.
Thank you.
KillRadio.org, anti-corporate internet radio, so not for profit it hurts. We're profit repellent.
Yes.
KillRadio.org, but we have cool guests like George Serra.
Hello.
That was that last track. That was from Opus 11.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big success for you. I mean, that kind of it put you on the.
Put me on the nerd list.
It put you on the nerd list. Put you at the top of the KCRW playlist.
That enabled all the Harry Potter fans to come out to my gigs.
So what are you going to do to attract a cooler audience besides collaborate with David J?
Audition for Marilyn Manson.
Nice.
And then I'll, you know, I don't know. I'm just doing this. Who knows?
Your work has also been on, you're saying you did a Discovery Channel show, and I know it's been on Buffy, and just from looking at georgesarah.com, there's some movies and things that you've had your music featured in.
Yeah, mostly TV, a lot of TV stuff, and yeah, CSI, Oprah Winfrey, you know, all those guys have, but Discovery I did 28 episodes for, and that was a really great experience, a good learning experience. So, you know, I feel very fortunate to have that, to be in discipline where you're constantly got to be working. Now it's sort of, I'm trying to think about what the next project will be, what the next...
You released a third album, Osiah. Was that from the Discovery Channel
project?
Yeah,
it was my favorite songs from the series I scored, the Plastic Surgery series. With those guys, with all the episodes, they gave me creative freedom. You know, they were using Opus 11 as the temp music.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, we want more of this. And I said, well, this is like very personal music. And they're like, okay, great. Just keep doing that. So with Osha, it's the Discovery.
Oh, is that how it's pronounced, Osha?
Yeah, Osha.
I've been calling it Osiah.
That's all right. Those were my favorite songs from the Plastic Surgery. And yeah.
And how did you release that? Was that through... Because we were talking before, you don't actually have somebody backing you.
No, it was these guys. They started a label called Transistor Records. And then, unfortunately, they folded soon after. So, I know that, you know, the distributors are still distributing the records because they have it in storage or whatever it is. But it will probably eventually become out of print, probably in a year or so.
Yeah. And then it'll be really expensive.
Well, then I'll, you know, put different artwork on it and re-release it or something.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who are some of your favorite musicians at the moment, electronica or otherwise?
Well, I really like Boards of Canada.
Yeah, I was
just
playing some of their stuff last week on the show.
Oh, great. And to me, I'm a huge Bjork fan.
Oh, really?
And I'm not a Sugar Cubes fan, but I love Bjork. And to me, her live shows are great. I mean, they're really amazing. And I like Aphex Twin. And, there's just... and also rediscovering a lot of the classical stuff, especially 20th century classical music, Satie and, you know, Arvo Pärt and...
Yeah, I mean, that clearly has an influence on
Shostakovich.
Your music.
Yeah, Shostakovich. And there's just a lot of film composers. Carter Burwell, he's a good one. Some old school hip-hop, LL Cool J... I like all that chub rock, you know what I mean?
Nice.
It's like I like it all, man. And I'm always curious to hear music coming out of Los Angeles. That I love that. And there's people that my friends, like Josh Hayden, I love his music. I think it's great. And there's just a lot of good stuff coming out from all over, all genres. Rock. I was listening to some rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's some good rock right now?
I liked the last Stars record. I thought that was pretty good. And Stereophonics, you know, just mainstream rock, pop, whatever. I mean, maybe it's not pop, I don't know, but to me it's like, it sounds good. And I like some of the MIA stuff. And yeah, just...
Oh, I want to ask you about String Trio. Like, when you started making the music, were you just playing those instruments on like a keyboard or something, and then you thought, oh, when I do this live, I'll get some people to play violin?
Yeah.
And then did you just went out and these are friends of yours, or you just went out and
started
performing?
Oh, yeah, there's friends of mine. This guy, Tom Voss, was a friend who was the first guy I ever asked to play strings, and he's a violist and violinist. And it's something that, you know, like when I was 7, my parents took me to the Hollywood Bowl, and that's when I really fell in love with orchestras and string sections and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's just being a musician, I know anything is possible in music. You know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't, to me, that's the thing. That's the beauty, I think, when you've been playing a musical instrument for a long time, and I've taken some lessons and been able to be fortunate enough to really work with a lot of great musicians and go out and see a lot of good music from all over the world, you know? And that's the other thing is it's really important, you know, whether it be world music or even like Kid Koala, you know, a turntablist. I mean, that blew me away. And so there's so much stuff out there, or you know, the stuff that's happening in Brazil, those guys. I mean, just see solid musicians, and that's what I love when I see good musicians or string quartet, like a really good string quartet. And
there's a lot of electronic music coming out of Brazil now too.
Yeah,
that's that sort of I guess the influence of their regional music, their traditional music, kind of lends itself to like to good beats,
right?
Like there, there's a lot of like really good drum and bass and you know, the bossa nova music,
right.
I've been listening a lot to Zuko 103.
Yeah,
and
so yeah, I mean, I forgot what the original question was, but
let's see. The development of String Trio.
It's music, so it doesn't matter. You know, I can add a sitar, or anyone can add a sitar, or anyone can do whatever to. If it's music, it's just, you know, people forget. It's like any instrument out there, you can sing the exact notes, and it's whatever. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, it's like making a film, you know, it's imagination. If you have the imagination, it's possible in the arts. So,
So what is your objective in the end of all this? I mean, is it just to make good music? Are you looking for fame and fortune, or,
no,
do you, I mean, are you looking, do you see yourself, you know, playing a lot of live gigs, or hold up somewhere in a studio making music for films, or,
I don't know. I don't. I've always. Well, I know now that I have no control over any of this. So, I'm just sort of like going with the flow and just trying to be very positive, humble, and grateful, and just, you know. I think also, you know, I was born in Seoul, Korea. At the time, it was a third world country when I was born there. I mean, third, like Iraq was. So I think also having that misfortune in that environment as an early kid really had a huge impact, because, you know, you see how, you know, people will spend their every day for the rest of their lives just making sure they can eat.
Right.
That's it. That's their goal. And what the amazing thing about that is, they're also probably the most enlightened people that you'll ever meet at the same time. That's there's a really strange you know, like when you meet people, like you hear about Nelson Mandela and stuff, and you go, well, okay, how can this guy get out and be so humble? Or Pope John Paul II actually forgiving the guy who tried to kill him and just talking to him, or you know, or the guy who passed away recently, Simon Wiesenthal. You know, mm-hmm. all the you know, you have all these people who have experienced these, beyond anything you and I or anyone here will experience. I don't care, if you got bullied in high school. I mean, trust me, it's nothing like South Korea, where if you're out past midnight, you get shot. Period. Right. Period. And there's no TV. Because there's no channels. There's no, you know what I mean? So it's like, you really, when you have everything stripped away.
I read an article once about how this anthropologist or sociologist, I don't remember, he was proposing the idea that the tribesmen of Papua New Guinea were actually far superior in intellect to, the New York elitist or whatever, because all day, every day, these guys are using their brains.
Right.
To get food, to get shelter.
Right.
And, this, from a Western standpoint, that seems kind of silly. But then when you really break it down, it makes sense. I mean, these guys are using their brains constantly.
Well, I think when the biggest, a lot of these people, it's like they're driven by the fact that they want to make sure that their loved ones are taken care of. So you always have this sense of compassion and humility involved. And maybe in this society, you're always worried that things aren't happening quick enough for you.
Yeah.
Like you want a quicker internet access. You want this. You want your cell phone. You want, it's all about, there's no compassion. There's no patience. There's no nothing.
And then there's no building of strength.
Right.
Because there's no exposure to risk.
Right. And then you run a red light because you just don't want to wait that if you don't, you'll have to be where you are for another minute.
Yeah.
So
miss that big important audition.
Right. or worse, there's nowhere you really are going. You're just in the habit.
You just don't want to be where you are.
Yeah, you just want to be number one. I don't know, So I think I just wanted to contribute something positive. That's all,
How novel.
what I mean? And especially in this industry when there's so much corruption and there's so many bad people in the music industry, and I won't name names, but it's
come on, it's internet radio. You can name a name.
It's like Enron. It's the same thing, but instead of stealing millions of dollars, they're stealing, your song, or they're stealing this. But the act is the same. You know what I mean? Murder is murder. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, taking
whether it be mass
that
genocide or your neighbor's kid, doesn't matter. You're still going to jail.
It's funny how we draw these distinctions.
Yes.
Especially with this never-ending war going on.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I have my little war song.
Oh yeah, well let's sign off with that then.
Okay, track 7.
Track 7. Cool.
Yeah.
George, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
It is good.
Oh yeah, well it is good,
When's your next live gig? When can we see you?
Oh, I believe it's October 12th at the Key Club. I'll be opening up for Miss Kitten.
Cool. Oh, cool.
And I believe I have another one October 26th at the Roxy. I'll be opening up for this amazing jazz trio. I'm playing with, opening up for, they're called the Bad Plus.
Yeah.
They do like Aphex Twin, but in a jazz trio. Drums, stand-up bass, and piano. And Bjork stuff and other stuff, but these guys are
amazing.
I'm performing this show with a bag over my head because what will come after? I won't, because my string players they're so great. And I'm not saying that as an ego. I mean, they're great musicians. I mean, there's a reason why they've played with Ray Charles and Alicia Keys, whatever. I'm just saying, but. Bad Plus, that's the 26th of October at the Roxy.
And all this information is available on georgesarah.com?
But you know what? You know what's really strange is that it's easier for me to get all that stuff up on my MySpace because I can do it and it happens immediately and I could just...
I saw you just started building your MySpace page.
Yeah, I didn't for a long time and I was like, I'll do it because maybe I'll meet a girl.
Good luck with that. This song is called Afterglow. It's the Armistice Mix by George Serra. George Serra has been my guest on isgoodkillradio.org.
Yeah.
Thanks, George.
Thank you.
I was ambushed, and well, me and my guys were ambushed, and it was just unbelievable for me to think that that was actually happening, that we had actually got blown up by a landmine. I was airbagged on a Black Hawk to a cache site in Iraq. Once we got there, Riccio and Mayorga, all three of us, we basically stood together. And once they put us on the litters, the hospital, it's like a MASH type of hospital, like we watched them on MASH. That place was getting attacked by mortars. And you could hear the firing outside, and that was the most scariest time for me during the whole period of time that I was over there. That was when I actually felt frightened to death. And the motor rounds kept getting close and close. We were hugging and crying and praying to God that, you know, he would help us from there. Shrapnel in my knee, shrapnel in my left arm. There's a bump on my head after the explosion. Lost of hearing. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Just the vision's not that great, but I'm alive, you know? I've been there since September, and two Fridays ago was the first time that I got my leg checked. And I've been there since September, and this week was the first time I got my hearing checked to know that I have my nerves are damaged. I had to pay for a place to stay. When I first got there, they put me in this one place that I still had open wounds, and it was just, I've never seen something that dirty. So I called my wife, and I told her that I was gonna just go ahead and rent a room at the Holiday Inn, which I did for about 3 nights. Being a guard, but it's like, you know, reserve or National Guard, as soon as you're on a regular army post, you get discriminated in the sense of, you know, well, you're a guard, you get different treatments, you get put on the back of the line, and your appointments, sometimes it takes months to get appointments. I'm a soldier, and like I said, I don't want to sound like I'm whining or complaining. I'm just sharing some of the things that go on. When I first got here, one of the biggest things that shocked me was that a lot of people were saying that the war was over. And it's not over. It's not even close to being over. I mean, it's just now starting. They basically they gave up all their military compounds and all the military bases, and they just went into the towns. And so they waited for us to get in. And once we got into the towns, and they're just picking us off. We're getting our butts kicked, I think. I mean, there's nothing that we can do against improvised explosive devices. You drive by or you walk by and they have a detonator and they detonate it, and that's it, you know? And if you're lucky, like John and myself, you know, you survive. But if you're not, then you don't. I died in the combat zone and my family were there, and I died for this country because I love this country and I want freedom for everybody, and I want freedom for my family and my kids, and the president can't go to my funeral. That's not good. That's not good at all. But that's just my opinion.